Welcome to the Shir of Ezra Parsha Shlach. Wanted to start tonight with a very important machlokas between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. And as part of this machlokas, there are other Rishonim who take sides on one side or the other. There's a basic machlokas between the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban about a word which we literally use every single day in our davening, and about which there's quite a great deal of dispute as to what exactly it means. So after the Chet HaMeraglim, which of course plays such a prominent role in the parsha, so Moshe Rabbeinu beseeches the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he says, Perek Yudalit, Pasuk Yudzayin, Va'atho Yigdal No Kolach Hashem Kasher Dibarto Leymar, Hashem Erech Hapayim V'Rav Chesed Notei Ovan V'Fosha, Kodesh Baruch Hu is slow to anger, you told me this after the Chet HaEgel. In light of that, generally translated, please forgive the sin of this nation in the greatness of your mercy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, again, in words which we quote all the time during the Slichus period, Salachti Kidvarecha, I have forgiven in accordance with your word. So that sounds pretty good. You know, Kodesh Baruch Hu forgave the Jewish people after the Chet HaMeraglim. The Ulam, right, as we say, yes, but, right, the Pasuk then continues, however, Kichol HaAnashim HaRoim Es Kevodi Vesosos Ayashos Sisi Bam Nitzim Mitzrayim HaMidbar Kim Yiru Es Ha'aretz Asher Yishbati La'avosa V'chomen Ha'atzai Lo Yiruha. All of the people who are part of this generation, with a few exceptions, are going to die out in the desert and not come into Eretz Yisrael. So the obvious question is, so what's Salachti Kidvarecha? I've forgiven the Jewish people, I've forgiven them, but you should know the whole generation is going to die out and not come into Eretz Yisrael. So that's called forgiveness? What do you mean? That's I forgave you? What would be if you didn't forgive us? So comes to Ibn Ezra with a tremendous yisod over here. I write to you the answer in Pasuk Yitzchak, Slach na, Achar shematzonu, she'omer in you es ha'oretz, achar salach mi kidvarecha. Once we see that the Ribbono Shel Olam basically says all of these people are going to die in the desert, and he says that even after having said, salach mi kidvarecha, that I've forgiven, you know, in accordance with what you asked, yodanu kinila slach na, harichus af. We see that slicha does not mean forgiveness, says the Ibn Ezra, even though we always translate it that way. Slicha simply means that God delays the execution of his anger, and as opposed to punishing immediately, he delays the punishment and punishes after the passage of time. In other words, says the Ibn Ezra as follows. What would have happened had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not said Salachti Kidvarecha, had he not engaged in Slicha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have destroyed all of the males between 20 and 60 right then and there. Now that would have been catastrophic for the Jewish people, to have, you know, a whole generation wiped out on the spot. You know, there'd still be Jewish people left, but it would be catastrophic. They wouldn't be able to get past that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his mercy, is ma'arich af. He doesn't eliminate the punishment. Really, he stretches out the punishment so that, you know, the Jewish people can absorb the punishment slowly as opposed to getting it all at once. But, says the Ibn Ezra, it's clear that slicha does not mean waiving the punishment, because Lamaisa, that entire generation, was punished. So slicha doesn't mean forgiveness. Right? It's such a tremendous, you know, change from the way we normally translate slicha, right? Slicha means forestalling the punishment, delaying the punishment to some later date. It does not mean erasing the punishment the way I think we normally understand it. Thomas continues to Ibn Ezra, v'chein v'nislach lo. Similarly, when we find with regards to the bring of karbanos, where it says that if the person brings the karbon to nislach lo, he will achieve slicha. So that doesn't mean that he will be forgiven by virtue of bringing the karbon, because we just established that slicha doesn't mean forgiveness. Rather, ashiyasa tshuva shlema. the karbon forestalls the punishment. So in other words, instead of getting punished on the spot, you bring the karbon, and the karbon acts as a kind of shield to protect you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, holds back on punishing you. He gives you the opportunity to do tshuva, but it's the tshuva which eliminates the sin, not the karbon. All the karbon can bring about is the idea of slicha. Right, so again, tremendous, tremendous idea that the Ibn Ezra is putting forward here.
The idea of the punishment means less intensity, less severity, or is it a different kind of punishment that it would have happened today instead of 6 months from now?
So it sounds like from the Ibn Ezra it does not really water down the intensity, right? It just waters down the, you know, you just buy time. Right? Now, there's all these people deserve to die, and they die. The only thing was that they didn't die, you know, the whole generation, the Dar Midbar, didn't die on the spot. You know, their punishment was delayed. It was, you know, spaced out over the course of 40 years. Now, on some level, I guess, by definition, that waters down the intensity of the punishment because, you know, you get more time. You know, the collective doesn't feel it quite as intensively. But Lamaisa, they were slated to die and they died. In other words, they got what they deserved. You know, they bought some time in the process. Oh, so Beza said, yeah, well, right. So he doesn't, but less than a couple of minutes come to that, because again, that's a, you know, a common phrase that we use. And, you know, we'll see in light of the Ibn Ezra, you know, how to try to interpret that. So, yeah.
When we say it's going out, are we saying it's over, or are we saying it's the coming out in the rift after?
I think either one. In other words, the punishment, as opposed to what you expect to happen, namely that the punishment will be delivered on the spot, then the punishment, the timing of the punishment can be either delayed or staggered. And I think the Ibn Ezra is open to either of those.
Yeah. Does that mean that this group never did tshuva, that they're ultimately punished, or they got it along the way and watering tshuva?
Well, again, Ashiyat tshuva, he's referring to an individual bringing a karbon, right?
But,
right, so my understanding from the Ibn Ezra is that for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not will, either the people never did tshuva, which the truth is the Ibn Ezra himself says later on in the Sedra. He makes that point in Pasuk Chavav in Yudalid. Right, by Dabra Hashem Oshariyah and Lamar, Masai Lo Eda Hara Azel Sashahem Malir Maloi, right, the Ibn Ezra explicitly, the Ne Yisrael Lo Asu Tshuva. Now, there's also a little bit of an implication, though, that the Chen HaMiraglim was so terrible that the Tshuva wouldn't have helped. There's a little bit of an implication, but I haven't quite said that. But, in other words, all that Moshe Rabbeinu dares to do is to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, I can't ask you to get rid of the punishment, you know, this was too severe. But at least delay the punishment, at least stagger, you know, the punishment in some way. That's the impression you get from the Ibn Ezra regarding the Chet HaMiraglim. Now, the Ramban argues, and we'll actually see this something relevant to this last point. The Ramban over here quotes the Ibn Ezra, and in response to the Ibn Ezra, he says, "Vanochom de'enai, ki slicha hanachas ha'onas." I don't agree with the Ibn Ezra that slicha just means delaying the punishment. I believe, says the Ramban, that slicha means removing, at least to a degree, the punishment. Maybe not in its entirety, but at least a degree of the punishment is removed. Kedivrei Unkelus. And he quotes the Targum Unkelus. What does the Targum Unkelus say? So the Targum Unkelus, in translating the word slicha, by, you know, by Yom HaShem Salati Kidvarecho, the Unkelus writes, by Yom HaShem Shavkis Kepitzkamach. Shavkis in Aramaic means I've abandoned something. Right? So in other words, I've abandoned the punishment. Not that I've delayed the punishment. Shavak doesn't carry the implication of pushing something, kicking the sand down the road, you know. Shavkis implies, I got rid of it, I abandoned it. So in other words, says the Ramban, the implication of the Targum Unkelus, of the Aramaic translation of the Chumash, is that slicha means, you know, God is waiving the punishment in some way. What's that? Well, how do you know that? Right? How do you know the shlicha means to wave something? The hagufa. In other words, it's just because the article translates to forgive us, right? But where did the article get it from, right? So, we're so used to translating shlicha as forgiveness, but how do we know that? I mean, hagufa, the Ibn Ezra is coming here and saying, you know, you see from this context that shlicha can't mean that because there's still a punishment, even after Hashem says, Salati kibarecha. So comes to Rambam and says, no, it's mashma in the Targum that, again, shlicha, shaskis, means that I've abandoned, in other words, the punishment is not going to be there. The karbanos specifically are brought in a case where a person is shogeg, where he sins unintentionally, so the karban not only delays the punishment till he does tshuva, but the karban actually removes the punishment. Again, a karban isn't strong enough to take off a punishment of a person who sins, delays it intentionally, which is why, typically speaking, the karbanos are brought when a person does not aver, does a sin b'shogeg unintentionally, but they have that much power. They're able to take off, you know, the effects of the sin that's done unintentionally. Right? So, the Omer Salachi Kidvarecha La'am Bichlalam Shlo Yakein Badezer the Yorishay V'yasa Oso L'goy Gadol V'yosumi Menu V'heim V'zaram Yosumin Ha'aretz. So what does Salachti Kibarecha mean over here in this context? Right? In other words, it says the Ramban. So God says, I've forgiven them. But they're all going to die in the desert. So what does it mean that you forgave them? He says, maybe these people are going to suffer. But the proposed punishment was much more severe. The proposed punishment was that God, Rahmanu l'Islam, was going to destroy the Jewish people. Right? And it was just the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was called after the Chet HaEgel. Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, look, I'll destroy them, and I'll make you into this great nation. That was on the table with the Chet HaMeraglim. You know, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was begging the Ribbono Shel Olam for. Please, don't destroy Klal Yisrael. Let them exist as a people. Let them come into Eretz Yisrael. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, oh, fine, I'll give you that. I'll remove that level of punishment. But Avada, this generation that actually sins, they for sure are going to die. So in other words, the punishment isn't removed in its entirety, but the punishment is lessened, you know, to be less severe than it could have been in theory. That's the Ramban's understanding of Slicha. It's clear, either way you look at it, either the Ibn Ezra or the Ramban, that Slicha is among the various responses that could be given to sin, slicha is a very low-level response, right? According to the Ibn Ezra, all slicha means is delaying the punishment. According to the Ramban, all slicha means is lessening the punishment, but not abandoning the punishment in its entirety, right? But it's clear that slicha is a much lower-level response than the total erasure of, you know, the punishment, you know, from beginning to end. Right. So where are you going with that? In other words, so right. I forgive you entirely. But the problem is this, you know, if it means I forgive you entirely, so then how do you account for the fact that Zohar Midbar died, right? In other words,
middle position, right? I'm going to punish the people that have committed the faith.
So to try to put what both Shelley and Chaim Meir are saying together, there's a Sfarno over here, which is interesting. I think the Sfarno is coming at this pasuk from a third perspective, different from both the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. The Sfarno is the only, neither the Ibn Ezra nor the Ramban really pick up on the word kidvarecha. You know, I have forgiven in accordance with your word. Right? No, that's not the focus of either the Ibn Ezra or the Ramban. The Sfarno does focus on it. And the Sfarno says, Kisha Amarti, Akenu Badeza, right? In other words, back in Pasuk Yudeis, where the Ribbono Shel Olam said, Akenu Badeva Va'orishenu, let me just strike the Jewish people with a plague and wipe them out. The Esa Oskol Lagoy Gogo Va'osu Mimenu, and I'll make you, Moshe Rabbeinu, a greater nation, than they are. I'll start Klal Yisrael over from them. So, Klaus Falachi Bezeha Ofen Sha'asa Omer. Right, so I'm forgiving them in response to what you asked. I originally said I'm going to wipe them out. Moshe Rabbeinu, you came back and said, please don't wipe them out. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I won't wipe them out. Salachi kidvarecha, what you asked for, I will grant. However, you didn't ask me to, atone for the sins of these individuals, and hence, it is a complete slicha, it is a complete, forgiveness vis-a-vis what you asked, but, there's another piece to this. Again, I think it's what Shelley and Chaim Meir are both saying. There's another piece to this. I will cause this generation to die out gradually over the next 40 years so that they don't come in Eretz Yisrael. So there is a complete slicha with regard to what you requested. Now, I think that's different from both the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban. It's clearly different from the Ibn Ezra because the Ibn Ezra says slicha doesn't mean forgiveness at all. I think it's different from the Ramban as well because the Ramban understands that slicha over here means a limited degree of forgiveness. The Sfarno is not saying it's a limited degree of forgiveness. The Sfarno is saying it's complete forgiveness for that which you ask. Now again, so you'll ask me the question, okay, so why did Moshe Rabbeinu go the whole nine yards and answer everything? Because apparently Moshe Rabbeinu realized that the sin of these individuals was not subject to forgiveness. In other words, God wasn't going to grant. That was too great. Right? So he asked that God should forgive the people as a whole. Don't wipe out the people. Let Chal Yisrael continue. Let us still continue to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem says, with God be that, with regards to that, Salachi Kidvarecha, this complete slicha for everything that you asked for. So if you had to summarize, I think there are really three different opinions over here, right? The Ibn Ezra is saying slicha just means delaying the punishment. The Ramban says slicha means a partial forgiveness. And the Sfarno, I believe, is saying that the word slicha itself actually means a complete forgiveness. In other words, it's salachi kidvarecha. For whatever you ask for, I forgave you completely.
I find the problem with all of this. To me, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't to say that everyone should be wiped out at one time. It was because the Chinese should say and the man should say. That was the reason to do it. And therefore, the idea is down the fair, I said. It had nothing to do with
No, but that was the reason. In other words, why shouldn't the Ribbono Shel Olam wipe them all out at once? Because that would be a tremendous chilul Hashem. Okay, but that whatever he asked for, in other words, that Klal Yisrael should not be wiped out in one fell swoop, he got that entirely, right? In other words, whatever the reason is for that, but he got it entirely.
You would say after that, you would say that just like the last one went right away.
Well, that's true, but again, that's a side point. In other words, why the forgiveness is taking place is, not the focus of our discussion. We're just trying to define what does the word slicha mean. And again, we've seen three different interpretations based on these three different rishonim. Right? Shlicha means pushing off the punishment. Shlicha means a partial forgiveness, or according to the Sfarna, shlicha can be a full forgiveness. What's that? Right. So again, that would somewhat depend, you know, whether the Yudgim Omidos entirely erases the sin. That would, it would hard depend on these three different opinions in the Rishonim, because Moshe Rabbeinu invoked the Yudgim Omidos over here, and basically, I mean, according to David Ezra, to take the most extreme opinion, he was not successful in, you know, getting the sin entirely forgiven. What comes out, again, just a little thought about davening is something very fascinating. Just to come back, people mentioned this before. Shlach lanu mechal lanu kater lanu. Right? So, yes, the average person, so those are basically synonyms. Right? Forgive us, forgive us, forgive us. Right? According to the Ibn Ezra, for sure, and even according to the Rambam, they're really not equivalent at all. In other words, according to the Ibn Ezra, the difference between shlach, mechal, and kaper is a real big difference. Let's start with kaper. Let's start at the end. Kaper, Rashi writes, in his commentary in the Gemara, kaper comes from the word to wipe away. Mechaper means to expunge the sin in its entirety. There is no avera anymore. Mechila, right, again, when you're mochel something, you renege on something. In other words, I don't make good on the claim that I have against you. So the implication of mechila is you sinned, the sin is still there, the Ribbono Shalom is not going to punish you. Right? But don't think the sin disappeared. Right? The remnant of the sin, the stain of the sin is still there. Slicha, according to the Ibn Ezra, only means that God is going to forestall punishing you, until such time in the future to be determined. So the progression, according to the Ibn Ezra, is a very logical and very stark progression. Slachlon, first of all, Ribbono Shalom, before we do anything, just don't throw the book at us, right? I mean, just give us time to work it out. Mechalanu, right? Maybe you can cancel the punishment. And then finally, we're meis panim to ask, kaper lanu, who should do away with the sin altogether. But there's a world of difference between shlicha, mechila, and kapara. And, it's very material. According to the Ibn Ezra, the way it's presented in the Siddur, is incredibly precise and incredibly in order, in terms of what we can gain to ask the Ribbono Shalom for after having the sin. Mochel the Soleil Ata. Right, so it's interesting. So why do we say in Shmoneh Esrei, Shlach Mechal and Kikel Melech Mochel the Soleil Ata? Right, so the truth is, so the beginning of the bracha is easy to understand based on what we're saying. Shlach, mechal, that's in order. So it could be once we've already mentioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a mochel, one who's willing to forgive the punishment, not just forestall the punishment, so then we want to stick to that and say, Kikel Melech mochel, we prefer Hashem to be a mochel than a soleah. Right, but we're willing to settle. If he's not going to be mochel, l'chol apachos, at the very least, let him be soleach. The avera. No. But in other words, we go. By the time we get to the end of the bracha, we go for broke. In other words, we like mochel, right? But even if we don't get mochel, we'll settle for soleach. We'll take what we can get. So the truth is that there's a Musar Vort, I think, in here, and we can relate it to the last thing that Ibn Ezra said. A guy is a tremendous, tremendous Azariah. I mean, you don't know anybody like this, but let's say, in theory, had a guy. There's been a lot of Azariahs, and they say that there are such people out there, right? So he decides that for a week, 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, he's going to wake up, really early in the morning, come to the 8 o'clock shlichus, and, he's going to take I'm going to take one of those mimeographed white booklets, and he's going to turn, and he's going to turn back and turn forward and do all the things that he used to do before Oskol came out with his Shlichus, you know, and he's turning the book upside down and sideways and all the things that he used to do in order to say Shlichus. He says, okay, Gavainu, I don't know what you did there. But Shlichus for 2 weeks, Gavainu, you know, that's great, Gavainu. No, of course, you know, the Shlichus is supposed to be a trigger to get you to do tshuva, right? So where do you see that idea? In the very word shlichus. Shlichus, according to the Benesra, just means pushing off the punishment so you do tshuva, as you wrote, with regard to the Mishmah. So in other words, all of our tfilos are not meant to erase the sin. All of our tfilos are meant to encourage us to do tshuva, which in turn has the possibility of erasing the sin. If you call those tfilos, which we said, mechilos, or kaparos, we'd miss the point. They're bedakos shlichos, because they're supposed to be a means to an end, as opposed to an end in themselves. Okay, that's what we'll pick up after night, and talk about tzitzis a little bit. Welcome to the second half of the shiur in the Nesra Parsha Shlach. As promised or threatened at the end of the first half of this year, so I wanted to speak about tzitzis, which of course is the very last section in the Parshas HaShavua. Very interesting in the Nezra on several levels. On Pasuk Lamed Ches, the Pasuk says, again, famous Pasuk, Dabro b'nei Yisrael yomayto aleihem, v'osu lahem tzitzis al kamtei v'idemu d'arosam. We are so used to the concept of tzitzis that we read the pasuk, we automatically read it, you know, okay, you're supposed to have a beggar out of the kantos, you're supposed to put on tzitzis, you know, again, we know exactly what it looks like. So it comes to Ibn Ezra and he gives a pshat, which he acknowledges not the pshat of halacha, but it's light years away from what we normally think about. So also on tzitzis, says Ibn Ezra, he's talking about Shnei Pirushim. There's two different ways you can interpret this pasuk. Ha'echad, she asked tzitzis, come out of tzitzis roshi. Ve'hem achutim ha'yotzim she'enem arugim, ha'kan se v'deyem al kol deger, choluk o mechnatzayim. Ki im t'chalkua, ki nehi kidmus konos. Says that Ibn Ezra as follows. Right? We find in the pasuk in Yecheskel that the word tzitzis is used in the sense of the strand, like a lock of hair. But also on tzitzis, al kamtei v'deyem d'arosam, says that Ibn Ezra, what that could mean is as follows. On every garment, whether it's a shirt or a pair of pants, there's typically a hem at the end of the garment, and the hem is straight. Comes the Torah and says, don't just have a straight hem at the end of every garment, leave some threads or strands that are dangling down, that are dangling past the thread, past the hem. Those are the stitches. Not the stitches we think about on the four corners of the garment. It's striking. You know, again, we're so used to the halacha that we sometimes forget to read the pasuk. Nowhere in Parsha Shlach does it talk about stitches being related to a beged arba kantos, the idea that the garment has to have four corners. The only place it mentions beged arba kantos is in Parshas Kiseitze, Gedilim Tassulacha, Alarba Kampos Kisuscha Shetachasaba, and it's in Ezra writes over there, there were those, not Kwanunzer, as they say, you know, the Karoim. The Karoim interpreted that what it's talking about in Parshas Kiseitze, what it's talking about in Parshas Shlach are two different things. It's whatever it is, one's a day garment, one's a night garment, you know, but in other words, there's no mention of Arba Kampos over here. So Mimela says that in Ezra, you can interpret the idea of sisters, is that basically at the edge of every garment, you're supposed to have three standing strings that are just, you know, coming out at the end of the garment. And then, the nasnu al-tzitzis ha-kanaf tzil-techeles, what should you do? Take a single, unattached strand of cheles, and attach that strand to the strings which are already coming out of the corner of the garment, right? So that's what he writes. And then when the Pasuk says in Lamed Ches, "V'hayo lachem l'tzitzis," which on the surface is just a very difficult phrase to translate, it should be for tzitzis for you. Yeah, okay, it's tzitzis. What do you mean, "V'hayo lachem l'tzitzis"? What should be lachem mitzitzis? The tefil techeles. That one strand of techeles, although it's not really attached to the garment, once you connect that strand of blue to these strings which are hanging down, it should have the din, so to speak, as if it's part of those tzitzis, as if it's part of those strands which are hanging down from the garment. Now, of course, this looks nothing like anything that we're familiar with in halacha, right? However, it's fascinating, and I'm not sure if anyone makes the connection, but I wonder if this Ibn Ezra could be the source of the following. Every talus gadol, just about, has all those fringy things besides the tzitzis. I don't know what they're called. I think they're called fringy things. What? Fringy things, right. So, where did that come from? I mean, I always assumed it's aesthetic, but is it really aesthetic? I mean, Adarabba, if you dive it in an old shul, like, I don't know, this one maybe, you know, and, you know, you sit down when you're wearing your talus, and there's some little piece of wood or nail sticking out of the bench, those little fringy things, I mean, they could be lethal. You know, you get up and the whole talus comes off, you know, because, Right. So where did this thing come from? I don't know. I didn't do research. It'd be fascinating to see where this idea of putting fringes on the corner of the towel, besides the fringes, comes from. But what's fascinating is the Chora, that's what the Ibn Ezra is describing as a pshat, not halachic pshat, but a pshat in how you understand the psukim and describing fringes. I wonder if, you know, these fringes at the corner of our Talashim Gedolim is somehow a remez in some way to what could be a, you know, a non-halachic poshet pshat in the Sukkim. So again, of course, from a halachic perspective, these fringes have no halachic value. Right, so... So hold on 1 minute, right? Because of course we know that Ibn Ezra, when it comes to any halacha, is incredibly strong. That, you know, you can't just say a pshat in the chumash and expect to follow it. Hold that question for a minute. Zatirish hasheni kasher hetiku chazal. The second interpretation of this psukim is the way Chazal explained it, i.e. that, you know, no, you have a four-cornered garment, and at each of the four corners, you make a hole, two holes, you know, depending where you buy your sisters, you know, and, you know, you have these four strings that are double over, and you wrap them up, and, yeah, that's the second interpretation of this psukim. Uva'avur shiesh eidim ne'emonim halapirush hasheni botel harishon. And because there are good witnesses, you know, solid, credible witnesses with regard to the second interpretation, so the first interpretation is therefore nullified and doesn't carry any weight. The language of the Ibn Ezra is so hard to unpack over here. Right? In other words, there is a way you could interpret these psukim not according to Chazal, but since Chazal is their interpretation, and L'chara, what he's saying is, they are Eidim Ne'emanim. In other words, the rabbis are good witnesses to the fact that that shot is correct. Now, it's not clear what he means otherwise. Who else are the Eidim Ne'emanim? But Chazal are the Eidim Ne'emanim to tell us that shot is the correct shot. Right, so therefore, forget about the first shot, which I mentioned. Right? So, the whole thing is hard to figure out beginning to end. So, again, as Yaakov said, it's Chazal versus whom, right? And if you really think, as the Ibn Ezra does so often, that, you know, obviously the Karaites are wrong when they interpret, you know, Chumash in this way, that way, the other way, why are you even bothering to tell me this chapter? In other words, the way the Ibn Ezra sets it up is, there's two ways you can read it. The first shot on the Ezra speak is not a bad shot, but it happens to be Chazal over the second shot, so we go with the second shot. Right? But the fact that he even gives, so to speak, airtime to the first shot is fascinating. So let's take it one step further, right? Just to compound this a little bit. Not just the Ibn Ezra, but Haigon is quoted as saying the first pshat al derech hapshat. Haigro. Okay. Let's take it one step further than that. Right? Trivia question. What's the Aramaic translation of sittis? You find yourself among native Aramaic speakers, and you're trying to explain to them, I need to buy a pair of sittis. Right? So, how do you say sittis in Aramaic? What's that? Good question. What does Uncle Liz say? Kuspidin. Kuspidin. That's very, very strange. Kuspidin seems to be some kind of Greek word, certainly not a Hebrew word. Right? So, we find that, by the way, there's a Rebbe Kuspidoi in the Gemara. Some suggest that Rebbe Kuspidoi had an attachment to the mitzvah of tzitzis, but kuspidin doesn't seem to be an Aramaic word, it's not a Hebrew word. If you look by country, I don't have the Yonasan ben Uziel in front of me, I think if you have a big Mikraos Gadolus, it's a tag of Yonasan ben Uziel. So Yonasan ben Uziel, I believe, translates it as tzitzisa, right? Tzitzisa. In other words, it's an Aramaic version of tzitzis, right? Kuspidin is a Greek word which means fringes. It's also very funny. Why would the Targum Onkelos not use a word which is really the equivalent of tzitzis? And why would he instead use a Greek word that means fringes, right, which is very misleading? Perhaps, again, there seems to be some misora, not from the Karoim. There seems to be some misora even within our Chachamim. Again, the Ibn Ezra, the Targum, the Targum, that somehow there's a layer of interpreting the psukim to be speaking about fringes generally and not just the tzitzis the way we understand them. I'm sorry? Right, because fringes implies that it's something that's part of the garment, which is a fringe, right? It's not really a fringe. This is an appendage, if you will, right? So there seems to be within the Masorah itself, again, we're not talking about the Qur'an, there seems to be within the Masorah itself some kind of layer of interpretation that, you know, in addition to the tzitzis, the way we have them, there's some inyan of having fringes at the edge of a garment. And again, just to come back to what we said before, maybe the practice of having fringes on a Talmud Gadol stems from this interpretation. I mean, the Ibn Ezra isn't just quoting this to throw it out, to say that it's totally wrong. The Ibn Ezra is quoting this idea to say that, you know what, it's not the mitzvah of tzitzis, but it's not entirely rejected either. There is room in our Masorah for this idea of fringes at the corner of a garment. Right, so Gedilim is telling us what the tzitzis themselves are. Right. Right. Now, again, it's clear. I think it's clear. Everybody, you know, clearly from a halakhic perspective, tzitzis only means Gedilim. You know, what Gedilim feel, you know, all the stuff that we have. But there's some level of, I don't know what you want to call it, Torah should be found, you know, some level of something. Right. You know, in other words, there is some Indian to have fringes at the end of the garden. Right. You can interpret it that way, but you know, in other words, Bahaya, you know, the stress would be lachem. Bahaya lachem l'tzitzis. In other words, you should. Right. Right. So you can interpret it that way. Again, Right. So you could interpret it that way. Again, Ibn Ezra was bothered by that in his first interpretation, which is why he said, Vahaya, the seal to Chelas, lachem l'tzitzis. In other words, even though the Pesach Chelos is extraneous, it should be ki'ilu as part of the tzitzis themselves. Let's just see a little bit further than Ezra. The hen had tiku. They the chachamim tell us he's mitzvah in deges yoshlo arba knafayim, that this mitzvah is restricted to a beged, to a garment that has four corners. Right? In other words, you wouldn't know that from reading Parshas Shlach. You only know that from Parshas Tisei. Tzitzis heim ha-gedilim. And the tzitzis here in Shlach are the same gedilim, the strands. Gedilim is, the wrapped things. The wrapped things that we read about in Parshas Tisei, they are one and the same. But again, you wouldn't know that just from reading Parshas Shlach. Fine. Now, he then goes on to make the following statement, which is just—it blows you away. The name mitzvah achomi sheyesh kol deged ba'avak nafayim she is kasa bo bayom chomer. There is a mitzvah that if you own such a garment with four corners with tzitzis, you should wear it all the time during the day. V'lo yisireno me'alav, not to take it off, l'man yiskiru, in order to remember the mitzvah. Right. So this Ibn Ezra is a very early source for the practice of wearing tzitzis all the time, right? Which, of course, we know, or, we don't tell this to our boys in yeshiva, but we know that wearing tzitzis all the time is not really the mitzvah. In other words, the mitzvah is that if you happen to wear a garment that has four corners, you have to ensure that there are tzitzis on those four corners. If you choose not to wear a garment with four corners, so you're not in violation of anything. In other words, the Gemara says that wearing tzitzis is magen ve'idon deriska, if there's a time of divine displeasure. So wearing the tzitzis is going to protect you against that. Okay, that's true, right? But strictly speaking, there's no mitzvah to go out of your way to wear tzitzis. The mitzvah is, if you're wearing a beged avakantos, you have to wear tzitzis. Here comes the Ibn Ezra, says, yes, but, in other words, there's this concept, you can't say it's a chiyuv mamish, but it's a very, very strong concept. Right, mitzvah, right, again, it's hard, you probably use mitzvah not in the chiyuv sense, because where would it come from? But in other words, there certainly is a very strong idiom, let's put it that way, to tzedakah wear a beged out of a kashrus. What's that? I don't know how you want to, define it halakhically exactly, but it's a double kashrus. Let's put it that way, right? So in other words, if your kid comes home and tells you, I don't have to wear tzitzis, you say, well, what do you mean? You never learned Ibn Ezra? What do they teach you in that school? Right? The Seder is Ibn Ezra, Allah Torah. And the next statement is really mind-boggling. Those who put on tzitzis when they daven, which again, apparently the impression you get from the Ibn Ezra was that it was not a universal custom. Right? In other words, there's tzitzis in Shas that seem to indicate that this man of the Balei Tzitzis, people were not so nakted about wearing tzitzis. Again, what that probably means is because the medieval garments didn't have four corners, so they were not makhid to wear tzitzis all the time. So here the Ibn Ezra, who is a contemporary of the Balei Tzitzis, is coming out and saying, that's wrong, you should make a point of wearing a beged avakantos all the time. And he says, and the people who daven could put on a talus when they daven. Why do they do that? Yasu says, Abur Shi'ikru b'kriyashma, v'hayel lachem l'tzitzis, v'asu lachem tzitzis. I understand why they wear a talus when they daven, says the Ibn Ezra, because after all, when you daven, you say kriyashma, you reference the mitzvah of tzitzis. So I see why it makes sense to wear tzitzis during that time. He doesn't reference the Zohar, but the Zohar says that a person who lays kriyashma without tzitzis, ki'ilu made eda sheker v'asma. The Gemara says it about tzillin. The Zohar says it about tzitzis. Right? I understand it. But says the Ibn Ezra, Rakwasi Daiti, Yotzer who chayiv lehisatif ha-tzitzis tishar ha-shos nishas tefila. If you had a choice, says the Ibn Ezra, I think there's a bigger obligation to wear tzitzis when you're not davening. Right? If you can only borrow a talis, for part of the day, you should borrow it for the non-davening hours. Why? L'man yizkar v'lo yishkev v'lo yasa aver b'chosho. The whole point of the tzitzis is to remind you to do mitzvos. So, b'shas ha-tfilo lo yasa aveiro. How many averos are you going to do already when you're davening? apparently by the Ibn Ezra, they didn't talk during davening, right? So you see that wasn't the problem, right? So says the Ibn Ezra, you don't need a talus when you're davening. You need a talus when you're not davening, right? To remind you when you're out, you know, at work or doing whatever. You know, Ethel or so is the character of Kamis and such things. Not quite the Ibn Ezra, no. So in the time of the Gemara, they walked around with talus. Again, sounds like, you know, it was common to wear tzitzis and tefillin all day. By the time of the Rishonim, we find they were actually negligent in tzitzis, and there's a lot of places to talk about how they were negligent in tefillin also, right? But again, it's hard to know what exactly that means. But it sounds like certainly they were not so careful about wearing tzitzis, because the Ibn Ezra says, you're so firm, you put on a talus when you're davening. You know, if you had a choice, better you should skip the talus when you're davening and wear the talus when you're not davening, because that's what you really need. Well, he's not really distinguishing between the two. He uses a baggage of tzitzis.
Let's see, very
what's that?
Let's see, very
well, this is Shaila about the shear of the talus kafan that we wear. So in other words, the talus gadol is certainly chayv and tzitzis will call a deos, right? The talus kafan is a convenient way to wear them all the time, because, you know, in New York, you're not going to walk around with the talus gadol on all the time. But there is a question about whether the talus kafan that we wear is really big enough to properly be a beggar, because it doesn't really cover the person, you know, for the full. Yeah, so we can make a bracha, but that's also why most of us who wear talisim have the minhag not to make a bracha on the talis kafan, to pocket it up with the talis gadol, because there is the shaila, you know, about whether, you know, the talis kafan is really big enough. Again, the minhag based on the Ramos to make a bracha, but, you know, there is what to talk about in that regard.
Right,
interesting. Well, I would bring Pakeris from that Gemara, and that was the fact of Kishri
Ashribo. Yeah, good, but right. That's what it looks like. But right. Chayim around the whole day,
okay, maybe. I don't think the point of the Ibn Ezra is don't wear a talus during davening. I think the point that he's making is don't Davka wear a talus during davening.
Because
you need more protection when you're not davening. Right, I think that's his point. Yeah. That's just a poncho. You wear like what we wear, talus kafan. Again, but he's using the word talus in he's wearing, right. Yeah, but if you try to plow with that silver thing, you'll end up choking yourself in the middle, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So again, the Ibn Ezra, as we know, was so sharp. And this voice of his, just such a powerful voice, you know, you think about, you know, it's not just sisters, the whole, I mean, as Rabbi Reuben points out, the whole idea of, you know, we're very firm in firm context, the kunst is to be firm in not such firm context, you know, it's not a kunst to be firm in shul, it's not a kunst to be firm while you're davening, you know, the kunst is to be firm when you're in the world, you know, that's really the kunst out there, you know, and this Ibn Ezra, we talk about sisters, really just brings it home in a very, very poignant kind of way. Okay, we'll pick up next week.